That just on the final exam blueprint, what it means is that the new content is since the midterm, you've never had a real test on it, only the online quizzes. So the review content is things you've already been tested on. So stuff from the beginning of the course, and then also stuff from the last course.
How many total questions on the?
It's like 130.
Is there much on the
internet? What is MGOH?
It's like 5 questions. What?
Magnesium.
MGOH is magnesium hydroxide that you better know as milk of magnesia. Yeah, the total review between those two, yeah.
I don't understand this question. You work on a telemetry floor, there's a standing order for MGOH for constipation, your patient is constipated, what would you do? Why would you not give them magnesium?
Wait, what was the question? Yeah.
You work on a telemetry floor, there's a standing order for MGOH, which is milk of magnesia, for constipation, your patient is constipated, what do you do? Like, wouldn't you just
Which
give
question
it?
Is it?
This one?
Yeah, it just says, what do you do? So you tell me, what do you do? You should know that. You should know the right answer, because we talked about it in class.
Why would you not get the milk?
Check renal function. And if renal function is normal, then give it. How do you check renal function? Creatinine what? Clearance. Or estimated GFR. No. No.
Just know that.
If it's a young patient, you can go by creatine. But once you get above 60, you can't go by just creatinine.
Is that all the time, or is that just because they're on a telemetry floor?
Telemetry floor patients especially, you have to be careful with, because calcium and magnesium are very sensitive. You know, cardiac patients are very sensitive to calcium and magnesium problems. And so you can really overload them with magnesium if they've got kidney failure because of heart failure or heart attack, you know, you can really screw them up.
Okay. List 4 of the CDC's 12-step program to reduce vancomycin resistance.
Washing your hands, strict.
List 4 of the CDC's 12-step program to reduce vancomycin resistance. Reduce vancomycin resistance. Yeah.
What?
This is from the very first chapter this semester. Yeah, it's a 12-step program that the CDC has to reduce vancomycin resistance. So I already heard wash your hands. What else?
That's one.
Why do people say again? Okay, isolate the patient or the pathogen.
There's a 12-step program to reduce vancomycin resistance. We need 4 of the 12 steps.
Stay on antibiotic treatment. Stay on your meds.
Actually, that's not quite. Okay. So make sure the patient needs vancomycin before you give vancomycin.
32. What was it? What'd you say?
Make sure the patient needs vancomycin before you give them vancomycin. Another one. Why do people need antibiotics in the first place?
Infection.
And is there any way we can prevent infection altogether? Just in general.
Antibiotics.
Think of what you had to do before you got into this.
Vaccinations. That one?
Yep.
Vaccinations? What, any particular kind?
The more infections you have, the more you need antibiotics. The more antibiotics you have, the more those bacteria become resistant. The more resistant they become, the more you need higher antibiotics. The more you need higher antibiotics, the more risk for MRSA.
Is Vanco one of the higher antibiotics?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what
right.
You want to
okay. Yeah.
Is this in our notes? Like, am I just going through this?
Yeah, it's in your notes. It's in the intro to antibiotic therapy, or principles of antibiotic therapy. Yeah. Get an infectious disease consult is another one. I mean, you just look in the book, and there's 12 of them. Choose 4. End of story.
Isolation was one.
Yeah.
What did you just say?
I said look in your book.
No, before.
And write down 4 of them.
Smart,
infectious disease consult.
Washing hands, vaccinations, keep isolation.
Yeah. Distinguish between infection and colonization, and don't treat colonization with systemic antibiotics. Another one is stop the antibiotics when the infection is done. Yeah, so sometimes they'll keep a patient on an antibiotic for 2 or 3 weeks just to be sure. And they're saying, well, you can see when the infection is gone by culturing it. When the cultures are clear, stop the...
Ooh, new question. What is the difference between amlodipine and verapamil? You said that when we were
great question.
Pharmacodynamically and therapeutically.
Ooh, even better question.
Whoa.
Read the question again.
What is the difference between amlodipine, which is Norvasc, and verapamil, which is Calin?
Calin.
Calin. Pharmacodynamically and therapeutically.
I'm actually going to talk about the two drugs when we do the must-know drug list. So why don't we do the must-know drug list, and then we can continue with this if you really want to. Because, I mean, I think you've got plenty of study materials. It's just do you have questions?
Yes, we do. 50-something of them. 48, I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm not going to answer that one because we're going to talk about it later. Next question.
Name a penicillin that would be appropriate for treating Pseudomonas infection. I can't remember.
Ooh.
Dr. Heyman.
For treating Pseudomonas?
Pseudomonas.
Would that be like a broad spectrum?
It would be broad spectrum.
What's the name?
What? No. I mean, and you...
What'd you say? Wait, what am I thinking? I thought... Is that right?
Yeah.
What is it?
Piperacillin. It's an extended, but yeah.
That away.
Yeah, but that's not a penicillin.
Okay. What drug class will enhance the effectiveness of albuterol, and how does it enhance its effectiveness?
Say that again, sorry.
What drug class will enhance the effectiveness of albuterol, and how does it enhance its effectiveness?
Say it again. You said cortisol, what's that drug class? Okay, so steroids. Now how does it work? How does it do it?
Reduce inflammation.
No. It does that by itself. How does it make albuterol work better?
Reduces inflammation.
Okay, it does reduce inflammation, but that has nothing to do with making albuterol work better. How does albuterol work?
It blocks beta.
No. It does something else to beta. No. What's the drug class called?
Beta
2 agonist. So, here's your bronchi. Here's your bronchi on drugs. Now, every time you get, here's a cell, and this little cell has receptors on it, okay? Every time you give albuterol, these receptors become a little less sensitive. If you give too much albuterol, they'll stop working, and the patient can actually die from albuterol overuse. When you give steroids, it resets these receptors to be more sensitive, and it also tells the cell to make a few new ones.
So they reset the receptors to be more receptive.
So it sensitizes receptors and increases the number of them.
How does it do that?
Because steroid goes into the cell and activates portions of the DNA. The DNA makes proteins, and some of those proteins are receptors.
What is the foundation of osteoporosis treatment?
Which is?
Calcium
and vitamin D at an early age.
Drink it. What do you think of this order? Oxycontin 80 milligrams, PO, BID.
Oh, wait. Oxycontin, P-O-B-I-D.
Oxycontin.
P-O-B-I-D.
What?
It's not an overdose. Well, overdose is a relative topic. We'll talk about overdose in a second. What is oxycontin? You've already said it. So the contin means continuous release. Continuous release opioid drugs should never, ever be given PRN. Only the immediate release one should be given PRN.
It's not PRN.
I know. So what do you think about that order? It's a good order.
Should never be given PRN.
Let's talk about the tolerance for a moment. Or let's talk about whether it's an overdose or not.
Good.
If I gave you 80 milligrams of OxyContin, it might make you stop breathing.
But they've built up a resistance.
Right. So this is for patients who are in chronic pain who have built up resistance. What's that resistance called?
Tolerance.
So they built up tolerance to opioids, so you can give them doses that would kill an ordinary person, and it doesn't even make them, nothing. Now, oh, by the way, you can give OxyContin BID
or TID.
OxyContin can be BID or TID, but never PRN.
Never PRN.
I took care of a lady that she would take OxyContin three times a day.
Yeah, that's TID.
So
oxycodone can be given? Regular oxycodone can be given every 4 hours. Regular oxycodone can be given every 4 hours. And it can also be given PRN.
But she would have small strokes sometimes.
Probably not.
No. It can be given PRN?
Regular, yes. Yes.
Every 4 hours.
Right. Continuous release, never PRN.
Okay. Do you have anything else to say?
No.
All right. Your MI patient has a magnesium level of 1.8. What do you anticipate will be done for this patient?
So the magnesium is 1.8, and it's a cardiovascular patient. It's a heart attack patient. So first of all, what's the normal values?
1.8
of magnesium. Normal level. It is normal level, but it's a cardiac patient. Does that change things?
Apparently. What is the normal level?
That's what
it is. Well, it depends on which sheet you're looking at. That's why I said 1.8, because 1.8 is definitely normal on all the sheets.
So give us a rough estimate. 1.7 to 2.4.
Yeah, like 1.7 to 2.4, or 1.5 to 2.5.
I think that's what it was on.
Yeah.
Okay. Type 1.5 to 2.5 on the
left. Yeah. I think that is.
Okay. So, it's a normal value. Is that good? Are we going to do nothing for the patient, or are we going to do something about that? It's a cardiac patient. Does that change things? Now, here's the rule. A cardiac patient needs to be above 2.
Why?
Because magnesium is mostly in cells. And so if it's in a cardiac patient, if it's less than 2, it's going to be too low in the cells.
So cardiac needs to be above
2. So for cardiac patients, they're going to be above 2. That's the general rule of thumb. Not every patient, but most of the time, if you see it below 2, the doctor is going to be giving them magnesium.
Okay. What are the major side effects of chemotherapy?
Oh, that's a great question.
Nausea, vomiting.
Nausea, vomiting. What else? What else is an adverse effect of chemo?
Decreased
appetite. What else? Okay, how does it decrease the immune response?
Those gosh darn little buggers.
Okay, well, metabolic demand, so cachexia. But what else? I mean, you said it would decrease the immune system. How? How would you know? I mean, how would it do it? What cells? Okay, so white blood cell counts will be low. And what's that called?
Leukopenia.
Leukopenia. What else might be low? Leukocytes, leukopenia. Neutropenia is a specific kind of white blood cell. All right, let's yeah. So white blood cells in general, leukopenia. Neutrophils, neutropenia.
Oh, fine.
Could it be pancytopenia? What would it need to become a pancytopenia? What's everything? Okay, red blood cells and what else?
White blood cells and platelets.
So thrombocytopenia and anemia and leukopenia are all possible. Now, not every patient's going to have pancytopenia. Some might just have one or the other. But they're all possible. What else? What else is a chemo side effect? Hair loss, alopecia. And why does a patient get alopecia? Because it's destroying fast-growing cells, because that's what a cancer is. So what else is a fast-growing cell in your body that might get destroyed? What?
Sperm.
So male impotence, not impotence, but decreased sperm counts. What else? What else might happen that's a fast-growing cell that could get destroyed? Skin cells. So you can have lesions of the skin. What else? How many of you have ever burned the top of your mouth? How fast does it heal? Like 3 days, 4 days? Is that fast growing? Okay, so epithelial cells, including the mouth, the urethra, the nose. What's it called when you have sores in the mouth from chemo? What do we call that? There's actually two words you can call it.
From chemo?
Yeah.
Sores?
It's not like thrush.
Well, thrush... Thrush is as a result of the decreased immune system. But a lesion in the mouth, when you have like inflammation in the mouth from chemo, what do they call that?
Inflammation?
Yeah. What's a name for the inside of the mouth? What would you say?
Yeah.
Oral mucosa. So one name for it is mucositis. Now, what's the name of an opening in the body? Just a general name for opening. Stoma. So it could also be called stomatitis. So stomatitis or mucositis, they're the same thing.
And they're in the mouth.
And they're in the mouth. You're like, we learned all this stuff in Pepper Farm 1?
Yeah. No, we did not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cardiac output equals, say it again.
Stroke volume
times heart rate. And if you want to break it down even further, what does stroke volume equal?
Not the ejection fraction.
Ejection fraction times?
Beats per minute.
Blood volume where?
In the heart.
In the heart when?
Preload.
And what's the other name for preload?
Diastolic.
No. End diastolic volume. So you could say cardiac output equals heart rate times ejection fraction times end diastolic volume. Next question.
Oh, what are the big five drug classes for treatment of heart failure? Jackson? No.
The big five.
I have this in my
Which
notes.
One is that?
The big five.
The big five drugs for heart failure.
Question is that, Arla?
Yeah, why'd you skip to question 26?
I'm moving back and forth. Will you just calm down?
Oh, I know.
Take a deep breath.
Wasn't it some sort of, yeah, some
What?
Well, it's heart failure.
Warfarin?
Morphine.
Morphine. No, that's
you're thinking
of heart attacks.
Right?
It wasn't clopidogrel, it was Coreg.
Okay, one of
which would have been
He was on clopidogrel too, but it was on Coreg, carvedilol that Okay, so for heart failure, the big five. One is diuretic. What kind of diuretic? Loop. So Lasix. Then what else?
Give me a minute, let me find it.
Well, I mean, it's for heart failure. Think of the problem in heart failure, and that should tell you what kind of drugs they should be on. Okay, so beta blocker. And give me an example of a beta blocker. What are the two that you use for heart failure? Metoprolol and
carvedilol.
Now, remember, what's the body's normal response to lowered blood pressure? You had a quiz on this. Okay, increased heart rate, vasoconstriction, by what two methods? Sympathetic, epinephrine, and renin, angiotensin and aldosterone. So what types of drugs? We already mentioned the beta blocker for the epinephrine. ACE inhibitor or ARB. Those are one class there for our purposes here. And do we have anything that counters the aldosterone?
Aldactone.
So now we've got four of the big five.
And the last one is
digoxin, which is an inotropic drug. Metoprolol slows down the heart and decreases contractility. And digoxin increases contractility and slows down the heart.
So the ACE inhibitor would be what, like lisinopril?
ACE inhibitor would be lisinopril. Yeah. And if you had an ARB, what would that be? Losartan.
So you can get ACE inhibitors or ARBs?
ACE inhibitors or ARBs. So for our purposes, in terms of the big five of heart failure, they're the same. Because they're accomplishing the same thing.
And what did you say the ARB was?
Angiotensin receptor blocker, Losartan. It's actually on our must-know drug list.
Our next.
I know. Do 26, that's a good question.
Epinephrine.
No, not epinephrine. I mean, you could use it, but we were not going to. Atropine. Or.
What is atropine?
What is atropine? You tell me. It's like the first drug we ever learned in nursing program. What? It is an anticholinergic. All right, so you can use atropine or you can use a mechanical device. Not mechanical, but a technological device. A pacemaker. Now, here's the key. You don't treat bradycardia unless it's symptomatic. So what would be the symptoms that a person might have from that? From bradycardia, what symptoms might we be talking about? Okay, so dizziness, lethargy, orthostatic hypotension, or hypotension in general.
Okay, can you go through this one more time?
Fatigue.
Hypotension.
Did you say dizziness? Hypotension, dizziness, lethargy, low blood pressure. Hypotension. Yeah. What? Right. Pacemaker or atropine. Right. If they're doing five at 50 beats per minute, don't treat it. Right. And a good assessment. All right, next one. Read us the next one. Read it.
Hypotension.
What is the treatment for hypotension?
Increase fluid. Yay.
And what else could we do besides fluids? Now, fluids is the best answer. But you could also use a vasoconstrictor. Or you could use something that would increase the heart. What would drugs might do those two things?
We always need epinephrine.
Well, you can use epinephrine, but we're not going to really. We're going to use what's the other thing that sounds like epinephrine? Norepinephrine. What's that drug name? Levofed. You can also use dopamine or dobutamine.
Is that ephedrine?
You could also use synephrine, which is phenylephrine.
Phenylephrine. Oh, synthetic.
The difference between epi and norepi is epinephrine is only produced in the adrenal gland. It's going to affect alpha 1, 2, beta 1, and 2. Norepinephrine is produced in both the adrenal gland and your sympathetic nerves. And it only affects alpha 1, alpha 2, and beta 1. It does not affect beta 2. We learned that like the very first unit or the very second unit of Pathopharm 1.
That's covered by something
day
else.
One.
Norepinephrine is an adrenal gland and sympathetic nerves.
That's when I learned arlesine. Pick one. Which one of you remember?
Say again? It does not affect beta 2.
All right, guys. What is the treatment for acidosis?
For acidosis.
Treatment for acidosis.
What kind of acidosis?
Doesn't matter.
Beta 2, the heart?
No, beta 2 is lungs, liver, and uterus, and muscle.
Okay. You have it to take the tape.
I hate it when I hear myself laugh on these tapes, by the way.
Are you recording?
Yes. All right, so what's the treatment for acidosis?
Which one? You want to start with?
It doesn't matter. Just give me an answer.
Blow out the CO2.
What?
Bicarb.
What? Bicarb. Bicarb is the best answer. And then the second answer you could give them is?
Ventilation.
Or correct the underlying problem. But the immediate treatment, bicarb. Can't believe you're cold. You're like gray. You're so cold.
You're small.
I know. If we could take it all together, we could.
Mm-hmm. Next.
What is the treatment for hypercapnic acute respiratory oxygen?
No.
Hypercapnic.
Ventilation.
Ventilation.
So hypoxemic acute respiratory failure would be.
Bing, bing, bing. And mixed.
Would be both. Which is the next question.
Yeah, so you think you're good is
So
now you feel dumb. Yeah.
Acute respiratory failure is ventilation for hypoxemic.
I'm telling you, if you know this stuff, at the beginning of next semester when you go into MedSurg 2, just read that test once a week. I mean, once you've gone through the hard work the first time, just read through it once a week. It'll be fresh in your head and...
So you think you're good test. We'll make copies after that.
When you get to critical care, you can have an easy time.
Yeah, but this has the answer.
Dr. Hewitt, it's the 29.
What's 29?
Major signs and symptoms of heart failure.
Oh, good question. What are the major signs and symptoms of heart failure?
That's the shortness of breath,
radiating pain.
Okay. The defining characteristic is shortness of breath or dyspnea on exertion.
Defining characteristics of what? Heart failure?
Heart failure. Okay. What is the major difference between...
But there's more than that. So you've got shortness of breath or dyspnea on exertion. What else? What else are big ones?
Pain down the left arm.
Okay, you could have chest pain. Fluid overload is the second big one. What are the signs and symptoms of fluid overload? Crackles and rails, edema. What else? Yep. Daily or weight gain. So crackles and rails. S3 heart gallop.
What?
Crackles and rails. S3 sound in the heart, the gallop. Daily weight and edema.
So once you start showing
once you start feeling shortness of breath and chest pain or whatever, when will these overloaded symptoms come on? How long does that take?
They're probably already.
This year?